In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, yeah, it's time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge in studio with this week's Pass the Popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Hello, Al.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Welcome in. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good, pretty good.
You're good.
Not necessarily as good as it seemed to be up there at Alphonse Stadium on
Saturday.
That's
crazy.
But man, that's fantastic.
It was a fun time, and off to Utah. You've never been to Utah.
I've flown over Utah, yeah. But I've never set foot.
I thought it might be the westernmost trip I've been on. I did not go when they played Hawaii back in the early 90s, but I'm looking at the map of the United States, and I think Missoula, Montana might be just a little bit further west.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
Could be, but it's probably pretty close.
It's in the neighborhood. It's there in the mountains. And
yeah. It's certainly as southwest as you've been.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So,
but no, kudos to them and kudos to the team for not only showing up, but showing up in an offensive way that I don't think anyone would have anticipated.
No, all the experts were saying, well, it'll be a low scoring game. Well, it was for about 7 minutes and then crazy, but it was a lot of fun. Now you saw a couple of movies this weekend.
I did.
One you say will be a topic during award season. The
yes.
other, not so much.
Yes.
Which one should? Do you want me to guess?
I think you could probably figure it out.
All right, then let's start with The Possession of Hannah Grace. Is that that's the title?
That is the title. Although I failed to remember that. like on three different occasions. I went to buy my ticket and gave the wrong name of the movie. That's how forgettable this whole thing is. From the title on down, there's nothing redeeming about this movie. And look, I'm not a hater as far as horror movies go. I'm actually quite a fan of the genre. I think there are certain subsets within that genre that are very difficult to do in a new way. And I think the exorcism movie is one of those, only because William Friedkin basically put that to bed back in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to top The Exorcist. And that's basically how all of these movies, like, that's the basic formula that all of these movies right. follow.
That's a high bar.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the beats are all there. Like, the basic characters are there. You know, old priests, young lady who's possessed because it's always a young lady. Like, the whole thing. And it's like, so with this movie, you're like, okay, so, you know, it's not like they're going to reinvent the wheel. But then they tease you a little bit. And they give you just this little hint of, well, maybe this is going to be a little bit different. Because the way it starts is it's full on, like, standard, like, every exorcism movie trope you can imagine, like you know, young lady tied to a bed with like strips of fabric, and you know, in this big empty room filled with like Christian iconography all over, like giant crucifixes and all that stuff. You got two priests, an old priest and a young priest, you know, chanting and flicking holy water and whatnot. And then the young lady who is possessed starts doing the whole guttural, like, you know, loud demon voices.
We got your mother down here.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then crazy, like, evil telekinesis and all that. So it's like, oh, okay, so this is, I've seen all this before. And then the girl's dad, like, suffocates her, like, kills her.
Whoa.
Like, straight up kill. And I'm like, oh, that's new. And then we jump forward 3 months to a completely different character, a young woman who apparently has lost her job as a police officer due to addiction issues and is looking to get back on her feet. And her friend, who works at the hospital, gets her a job as a morgue intake attendant.
Oh, good. This will work well.
Right. And so we're a morgue intake attendant, and then she takes in a corpse, and wouldn't you know it, it's the young lady from the beginning.
Mm.
And 3 months later, looking in pretty good shape for someone who died 3 months ago.
Oh dear!
As you might imagine, it's like oh, so we're gonna do something a little bit different with we're gonna get a little bit of a glimpse of the after exorcism sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm kind of intrigued. It took all of like 2 minutes for them to just squander all of that narrative possibility and just fall into the standard like jump scare, like skittery movement, like flickering lights, kind of like boring horror movie crap that you just generally see from unimaginative filmmakers. I wanted this to be more interesting than it was. I can't in good conscience encourage anyone to see this movie. Not because it's not, certainly it's not good, but it's not even it's not even bad enough to be entertaining in that respect. It commits the cardinal sin of any movie, really, but of horror movies specifically, in being not bad enough to be any fun.
Oh yeah,
like, 'cause it's possible to watch a bad movie and enjoy yourself.
Sure.
This is not that movie. It's just sort of dull. There's no real storytelling to speak of, and it's just, yeah, it just feels like a waste of time. Mm. And I'll watch a bad movie, but don't waste my time. And that's really like it's relatively rare for me to have a movie that genuinely feels like, oh well, like I should have just stayed home and written the review sight unseen. Like, I could have done that, but instead. I gave 90 minutes of my life, which felt like many, many more, to Hannah Grace and her I called it the exorcism of Grace Hannah like four times, and it's like, that's not what it's called at all. Yeah. But yeah, so yes, the possession of Hannah Grace. Yeah, don't bother.
But you had a much better experience seeing Green Book.
I did. It's playing at it's actually screening at Railroad Square down in Waterville. And that's where we went to see it. I'm crossing my fingers that it makes its way up here at some point in the coming weeks. I think it might. The folks at Bangor Mall Cinemas are really good at making an effort to get the sort of awards season kind of offerings as they go into wider release. So I'm crossing my fingers that local audiences get a better chance to check it out, because it really is. It's a phenomenal movie. It's one of those period pieces where, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, so this is going to be this sort of sentimental, like, white-black friendship in the 60s and, you know, the white savior, and they're going to solve racism and all that. And it kind of skates up into that direction a couple of times. But for the most part, while that's sort of the backdrop for what we're seeing, the real story is the dynamic between the two leads, Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, both of whom are phenomenally talented and bring those talents fully to bear in this movie in a way that's really just, it's just fantastic to watch. It's based on a true story. A gentleman by the name of Tony Lip, who lives in Brooklyn in the early 60s, played by Viggo Mortensen. He lives there with his family. His wife's played by Linda Cardellini. He's a bouncer / usher at the Copacabana. Like, that's his job. He's this big, you know, Italian, like, the whole, like every, like, Italian dude stereotype you can imagine just rolled into this one ball. But the Copa, is closing down for a couple months for renovations, so he needs a gig. Friend of his calls him, says, okay, there's this doctor who needs a driver. And he's like, all right, well, I know how to drive, so he goes and applies for the job. Turns out, not a medical doctor, a doctor of music by the name of Dr. Don Shirley, played by Mahershala Ali, who is preparing to embark on a piano tour with his trio of the Deep South. And he needs someone to drive him. And so, we've established earlier that maybe Tony Lip doesn't have the most enlightened attitude with regards to people of other races. Again, a product of his time. So, you know, it's like 1963 or whatever. You know, Italian dudes living in Brooklyn weren't necessarily all about, you know, race relations. But he takes the job and winds up driving Dr. Shirley to these gigs. He's gifted before they leave by the record company executives, one of whom is played by friend of downtown PJ Byrne.
Nice.
Yep. The titular Green Book, the Negro's Guide to Traveling. It was this real book that African American travelers used in order to find places that would serve them, would let them stay, basically, you know, through the segregated South. And so that was where they derived the title. And so the the story basically just follows these guys. You know, obviously they're coming from different worlds, and we watch as their sort of relationship develops over the course of basically being, you know, trapped in a car together for, you know, hours upon hours at a stretch. And we get to watch as not only as Dr. Shirley deals with the realities of the segregated South in the 1960s, but we get to see, you know, this guy, Tony, who's never had any reason to even think about this sort of thing, to get a much better sense of just what it means to be a black man in America at that time. And so you bring those two together and it's just fireworks. Like the work that the two of them do together is just outstanding. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, there are occasional hints of the sort of white savior kind of vibe, but they're very few and far between. Like it's really more of a choice to focus on a very small sliver of what is a much larger story. One of the biggest surprises of this movie is director / co-writer / co-producer Peter Farrelly.
Yeah,
that's like for those who are unfamiliar, and I can't imagine you are. The Farrelly brothers basically reinvented gross out comedy in the 1990s, and now you've got one of them directing what really is a fairly sensitive look at some fairly complicated stuff. And again, it's based on a true story. Tony's son Nick went on to grow up to become a screenwriter, and so the story that they wrote is based on interviews with Tony and with Dr. Shirley and from the letters that that his dad sent home to his mom while he was on the road. It's a remarkable piece of work, largely because I don't know that you're going to find a better 1-2 punch in a movie than Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, and that like the two styles of performance were so wonderful. You've got this wonderful kineticism from Viggo Mortensen, like never stops moving. Like even when he's driving a car, there's a constant sense of motion there. And then you set that aside across from Ali, who has everything very, like very contained, very controlled, very still, except when he's behind the piano. Like that's when that energy sort of is allowed to be released. And just as an aside, if he couldn't play the piano before he started working on this movie, whoever made it look like he could deserves a raise, because it was, I mean, those scenes were remarkable, and they're the sorts of scenes that can really drag you out of a movie if they're not executed right, well. Right. Like it's like you can tell if someone actually knows how to play. Yeah. Like the waving the hands around, and it's just like, it just felt very, very genuine. And it makes you wonder, I know Ali was a musician in an earlier life, but I don't know if he actually, you know, played. It's just one of the details that this movie gets right. My wife and I were talking about it, and we were talking about how much easier it is to make a period piece set 1,000 years ago than it is to make one set 50 years ago.
Right.
Because you got to get the look right. Like, exactly. You know, and it's like you have these shots where it's like all the cars are right, the clothes are right. Like stuff like that matters when you're trying to make a movie like this. And like they get all that right. It's, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but I'll tell you what, both of those guys are going to be on a lot of short lists for a lot of awards going forward. It's really worth seeing.
Green Book, highly recommended by Alan Adams. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you Wednesday.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah.